central bank digital currencies, digital IDs, artificial intelligence, and big tech surveillance. What does our digital future really look like? Join me, Alastair Harding, for a look into our digital future every Wednesday on Paul Brennan's Breakfast Show, right here on Reality Check Radio. Good morning. Welcome back to The Breakfast Show. My name is Alastair Harding, and I'm sitting in today for Paul Brennan, who's on his way to Queenstown to set up residence in the brand new RCR studio. And as I said at the top of the show, I've been recently doing a series called Our Digital Future for Reality Check Radio. And as part of that, we've been looking into central bank digital currencies and digital IDs and all those other things that make up our digital future. Now, of course, one of the biggest reasons for us doing this series is that the Reserve Bank right now is designing and developing a CBDC for New Zealand. And right now, there is a submissions period for the public to put in their submissions about what a CBDC means to them, or even if we want one. And the Reserve Bank plans on taking all of our submissions and continuing their design and developing in the hope that they're going to launch a CBDC here in New Zealand by 2030. Now, they've already told us that they don't mean to replace cash with it. However, all over the world, almost every country in the world right now is developing their own CBDC, almost in lockstep with one another. And so it has made a lot of people wonder and question what is really going on. So today I want to start today's show by talking about a New Zealand Herald story that appeared last Friday all about the CBDC consultation period. Now, it seemed to me that this news story in the New Zealand Herald read a lot like a press release that had just been rewritten to fit the Herald's style and also include quotes from the Reserve Bank's Ian Woolford, who is the Reserve Bank's head of money and cash. Now, we've also requested Ian do an interview with us, but we haven't received a response yet, and I'm sure we will, and when we do, we'll include it, but it just won't be today. Essentially, the story in the Herald says, firstly, that the New Zealand CBDC will not give the Reserve Bank the means to oversee or intervene in our spending, which I believe is not true, because a CBDC is programmable. That's what a CBDC is. It's inherent that it is programmable. And he actually admits that, I think, a little later on in the story when he says that a CBDC would give the Reserve Bank the power to implement monetary policy. So immediately, if they're doing that, by fiddling with the currency, they're intervening with our spending. That's my take on it. And hopefully Ian will come on the show and he can give his perspective on that. But also, he states that the New Zealand dollar is under pressure from other forms of money. So it's important to develop something to keep the New Zealand dollar competitive. And it's also important to ensure that it's not vulnerable to a cyber attack or a data breach, which is really interesting since this story came out the same day as last Friday's worldwide internet outage. So I've got Jodie Brunning here with me now. She's from Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility, and she's a regular on RCR, and I've interviewed her twice on Our Digital Future already. And she's coming on today to discuss that story, but also to discuss the Reserve Bank's submission process for the CBDC. Because as I said, submissions on this close on Friday this week. So we'll get into that too. But first, welcome Jodie to the show. What do you think of that story in the New Zealand Herald?
Hi, Alistair. Thank you for inviting me on today. Well, Woolford's head of money and cash, and he's responsible for overseeing the CBDC consultation. So of course he's going to have this attitude and have this, you know, perspective. But the problem is the Reserve Bank of New Zealand is not only responsible for monetary policy, so managing currency. The central bank is the financial markets regulator. It's responsible for oversight of the financial system, for prudential regulation of banks, deposit takers, and insurance companies. So where is, for example, the head of the financial markets regulatory system talking about what might happen if the Reserve Bank of New Zealand was entering the commercial retail market and competing with retail or slash commercial banks? You know, we haven't seen anything there. You know, Woolford there sort of says that, oh, well, you know, it'll give citizens a choice. It'll be a spur to competition. You know, and he sort of says, oh, well, it might mean that there's a, it might circumvent retail banks. You know, there's a real concern by retail banks that there will be basically a rush to CB, to central banks, to the to reserve banks. He says it'll be at the margin. I saw that somewhere, I saw that it could be 20% of people move. And you can see the erosion possibly can happen because, of course, right now we have these big retail banks that are virtual monopolies. People don't trust them. But the problem with the Reserve Bank is it's trading on its existing trust from actually being a heavily regulated entity that actually can't release money. When you can release money, you automatically become much more powerful. So the question here is, if they're trading on their past history of sort of being a conservative bank that doesn't, a conservative reserve bank that actually has more powers than most reserve banks, turning around and also being able to release a central bank digital currency. And it's very clear that central bank digital currency is different from the currency, the digital currency that you have in your current account with ANZ or whoever today, because it's going to be programmable. It's going to involve smart contracts. It's necessarily programmable because if they make a mistake, they need to be able to pull the money because they might have put it in the wrong account. But we know that this can happen at scale with this technology, and that's kind of why it's so exciting for central banks, but also for the Bank of International Settlements, which is largely stewarding and leading policy on this. And a lot of the terms and the ways of thinking are echoed by the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. They're sort of cutting and pasting from international fintech documents. Their language is just like that. So, and we talked about that at Physicians and Scientists for Global Responsibility in our Stepping Back from the Brink, the Programmable Ledger for democratic risks that arise when digital IDs are coupled to central bank digital currencies, when we wrote about that in that paper.
But the story says, I quote, a digital version of the New Zealand dollar would not give the Reserve Bank the means to oversee or intervene in our spending. This is patently untrue, is it not? I mean, it's completely false. A CBDC is programmable.
The problem, and I've written about this in the Daily Telegraph as well, it's once you couple central bank digital currencies with your digital ID, so you are not going to get access to CBDCs without actually having a digital ID. Remember, digital IDs are only, you could only get a digital ID if you submit to an iris scan, so they have your biometric data. So the central bank potentially has the power to have oversight and look at our transactions, yes. But the greater risk, of course, is the fact that there will be the potential for a whole of government oversight of our transactions, limiting and the programmability functions can limit perhaps and potentially what we do, how we use that money.
But this quote says, it will not give the Reserve Bank the means to oversee or intervene in our spending. All of those things that you've just said mean that it does. I mean, for instance, a centralized ledger by itself means that they can oversee what is being bought and what is being sold. The ID system means that they can see who is doing the buying and who is doing the selling. I mean, sure, he can promise that he's not going to do that, but a CBDC allows for all of those things. It does mean that they do have the means to do those things.
I would say you are correct, Alistair.
So why is he saying that in a New Zealand Herald story? And why is the New Zealand Herald not pulling him up on it?
Because foundational in securing social consent is the claim that what they're doing is trustworthy. And so this is why one of our first chapters in our PSGR paper talks about, goes in depth into trust. And it's why all the, I talk about the Bank of International Settlements, but it's the fintech, all the fintech markets and the management consultants such as Accenture, who's working with the RBNZ, they have produced policy paper after white paper after white paper that talks about trust and how digital trust and how digital IDs are trustworthy. They use the trust is a rhetorical term used over and over to secure consent and infer that these technologies are safe. But the problem is they are black boxed. They are managed by unelected bureaucrats, and they can be they can be deployed at scale, and it's very, very clear. It's called composability. The composability function means that they can clip all these different smart contracts together and target groups of people. And so they don't, you know, this is all the work the Bank of International Settlements are doing. But of course, in the RBNZ's, in all their documentation that you can download, they don't really talk about this. Smart contracts are talked about a little bit in what's called a dossier that Accenture, who's working with RBNZ, have published. But they really sort of downplay it. It's they keep wanting us to think it's safe. And interestingly, and we'll go on to this, the survey conflates just about every issue that they could possibly conflate. What I want to emphasize about that NZH paper is that they're only talking about a small sector of the RBNZ's roles and responsibilities. And so remember, the RBNZ are responsible for releasing cash. So traditionally, cash was what they would term their monetary sovereignty. The RBNZ tomorrow can turn around and make sure that small and medium-sized businesses don't have adverse regulation that makes it harder for them to keep cash. They can turn around and make sure that cash is always available in the smallest country town for people to access. They can turn around and ensure that people could easily have a month's worth of cash on hand, that they could get out enough money from the bank at once for a month's worth of cash on hand, so that can be emergency money should there be a problem. So the RBNZ could actively work to ensure that cash was actually accessible and not that there weren't barriers to using cash, because that's what's we're actually seeing a ratcheting of how easy it is. It's becoming harder to use cash in our society today. So that's one thing. But then Wolford also sort of, they keep conflating digital cash, because retail digital cash is very different from central bank digital cash, because retail cash is harder it's harder for governments to move en masse to target groups of the population and to should an emergency, inverted commas, occur or something like that. So Wolford doesn't really want to talk about all those uncertainties about central bank digital currencies.
Okay, talking about emergencies, on the very same day that story came out, we had a worldwide internet outage. So in that particular case, what would have happened if we had a CBDC that day, if we were relying on a CBDC? It would have all gone down, wouldn't it?
Well, I tend to be on the, we can't say that. We can't say it all would have gone down, because, perhaps the RBNZ was as secure as they promised to be. But equally, we can't say that wouldn't happen. So the RBNZ and all the central banks are working terrifically hard to ensure that there will be some sort of programmability function, so that if there is a crisis, if the power goes out, if there's an emergency, that people will still be able to use their CBDCs. Now, what's really weird or strange is that the RBNZ isn't as concerned about stewarding and supporting retail banks to ensure that retail bank currencies will have those same enabling features and to support, for example, a meeting of all the banks to make sure we can do this at the retail level. And this is what we're seeing, is the central banks starting to only think in terms of how its own problems need to be overcome, not how general technical issues and issues of keeping money transfer secure and fast and affordable for the general public at the retail level. They're already kind of forgetting about making sure that's working, because all they want to do is focus on central bank digital currencies, which gives them extraordinary power.
And he says actually in the story that some the banks that he's been talking to are actually approaching this quite nervously, because as we've also talked about on our digital future on Reality Check Radio with our episode with Simon Angelo, actually, is that this could mean the end of the retail bank in New Zealand. I want to go on now, though, to the story about the submissions process, because you've gone on and you've made your submission and you've done, there's a survey that they ask you to take. Can you tell us about what should people know before they go in to make their submission with the Reserve Bank on the New Zealand CBDC before Friday? Because on Friday, the submissions close, and we're urging everybody to get on there and make their submission. What can you tell us about that submission process?
Okay, well, firstly, people shouldn't wait to the last minute. The New Zealand government have a habit of writing off submissions that are clearly seen to be as a process that to arise as a result of minority or, you know, external groups advocating for a certain topic. So rather than thinking that the public join these groups because they themselves have concerns, they tend to just write off people when they all have the same thing to say. So I want people to think very clearly that it's what I call entrapment right now, because people are damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. So the survey is, I'm hoping to get an article in the Daily Telegraph this afternoon, and in it I actually say that the survey, the CBDC survey, is far worse than I thought it might be. And I'm also saying that it's a remarkable example of a government institution constraining their thinking in such a way that might prejudice an outcome in their favour. So I want the public, when they go into this survey, they can love CBDCs and they can see that they're the way to save the planet. They can do that. But from the start, can they say yes or no? I want them to know that they can't. They cannot say, yes, I want digital central bank digital currencies, or no, I don't. It's very clear there's no choice for the public here.
So the questions are cultivating a series of certain answers, is it?
Yeah. So this is the article I'm writing that I've written. I've done a discursive analysis of the survey questions. And so the first question is, do you agree with our reasons for investigating digital cash for New Zealand? So we have to disagree or agree with the reasons for investigating digital cash. Like, the reasons are because of monetary sovereignty. Well, actually, I think that those reasons are not actually compelling, and I think when I say no, I'm not able to say no, I don't want CBDCs, because I actually think that the whole process of analysis by the RBNZ is captured and faulty, and that there's been no legal or economic or any other analysis critically looking at the entire issue outside of the RBNZ. The RBNZ are the sole advocates in New Zealand. So this survey, even the first question is terrible. You can't say yes or no, because they're actually asking you that, will you say yes or no to reasons for investigating digital cash?
So the most basic question is, do you want a CBDC or not? They don't give you the opportunity to answer that one.
Yeah, no. And the next question is, how important is it to you that the Reserve Bank issues central bank money, such as physical or digital cash that the public can use? Well, they're conflating physical cash, which we all want, with digital cash, which we don't want. But if we say very important or neutral or not important or unsure, we're saying that about physical and digital cash. It's a bullshit question. Excuse my language, Alistair. I don't think I've ever said that on Reality Check Radio.
That's okay. Well, this is one of the biggest problems that I have with this consultation period, because they're talking about a CBDC. But in their first consultation period, they found out that people didn't want to lose cash. So they renamed it. Instead of calling it a CBDC, they've rebranded it to be digital cash. And I think that that's not being very honest, to be honest with you, because a CBDC is nothing like cash at all. Cash is, it's anonymous. You hold it in your pocket. Nobody can control it except for you, because your hands are literally on it. And when you spend it, it is completely anonymous. So, like you say, they're conflating it with real cash that you can hold in your hand. I find this to be really, really dishonest.
I find it to be cunning and misleading. Question three, Alistair, is, how important is it to you that people can use cash in digital form? Very important, neutral, not important, unsure. Huh, I already used cash in digital form. I know it's critically important, but because they're using the term digital cash to infer a CBDC, in question three, I don't know, am I talking about cash in digital form as a CBDC, or am I, or does this include my retail bank account that I already use? So, you know, I think Visa came out in the 50s, MasterCard in the 60s, FPOS in 1981. So we are used to using cashless currency, but it's, you know, normally, I mean, these big corporations that are the credit card guys are now effective, you know, duopolies, sort of, they're super large, but it's a little bit more aggregated with other different organizations and smaller banks than if we just had it coming under central bank umbrellas. And the question four is, which features of digital cash are important to you? Just about every one of these features available for everyone. A private way to pay things, free from, can be used without power or internet, are all problems or dilemmas or issues that concern retail digital cash as well. But there's one statement there that say it's free from government control. Now, I take issue with that statement because I actually want government regulation and oversight over the financial market. So I do want a degree of government control. I actually don't want the government controlling my bank account. So there's a difference here. But in the inane way this survey is structured, I can only say it's not important to me that it's free from government control, or it is. Okay. You know, it's crazy.
Okay. So is there any point, there's two parts to this question then. Is there any point in filling out the survey? And number two, what are the, you can also make a written submission. So my takeaway from this is that the written submission is going to be really, really important. So the first part of the question is it, should you even bother? Should people even bother doing the survey? And number two, what should they be writing in their written submission?
I think people should look personally through the survey and decide whether the survey, you know, is merit worthy. And that comment, any comment about the merit worthiness of this, if they decide not to take the survey, they should comment about the merit worthiness of that survey in their submission. I think they should make a submission. I think the submission should be very clear. And it should only be one page, and I think they can, you know, people can be, and I don't think people should just cut and paste, but they should be guided that, you know, that they can look to information sources that help them think about how they want to answer, but they do need to be individual in their responses. And again, I say it's only one page, but you know, because we have these problems that sit with us. We have the absence of external legal scrutiny. And I'm talking about public and constitutional law. I'm talking about administrative law. I'm talking about what is the best in the best interests for New Zealand moving forward in terms of our civil, constitutional and human rights, you know. But we haven't seen a single academic or legal expert consider these full ramifications. And I'm sorry, Alistair, but I certainly don't want the Attorney General stepping into that place, because the Attorney General is the head of Digital New Zealand. We can see the RBNZ downplaying the programmability in the smart contracts, yet it's very clear by the Bank of International Settlement that smart contracts and programmability are part and parcel of this. So we know that there is the potential for these technologies to be introduced over time, and through the introduction over time of more and more technologies that are cleverer and cleverer and black box, like an aircraft black box, the power of these can become more and more, become stronger and stronger. And then the public can also sort of be concerned about the fact that digital ID and CBDCs will be conjoined, so that their identity must be known. And the question then is, does the Ministry of Health need access to this information for a health emergency? Does the NZSIS need that information? Do the police need that information? Because that there is massive potential for that, for behind-the-scenes access by government agencies.
But the problem with what you just said there, though, is that if we start writing in our submissions about how digital IDs are going to be linked to the CBDCs, they're going to potentially discount those submissions simply because, oh, no, we're not talking about digital IDs here. That's the problem with writing about that in your submission, isn't it?
This is what the government have been doing for years. And even the process of the public talking about that in their submission, and then afterwards reading the agency report that will come out talking about the submission process, when the public make their submission and then they go and read the agency report, theoretically the report by the RBNZ that comes out months later should say this percentage of people said yes or no. But they haven't been saying that. But when the people read the agency report and they see that their queries and their questions and their concerns about programmability, for example, and smart contracts, which is in all of the Bank of International Settlements documents, and the Bank of International Settlements is the central bank's bank. The RBNZ liaise with the BIS, they chat with, they have meetings, they have conferences. So they're being misleading and by ignoring all that. So the public, it's a process of the public understanding where the so-called processes that are meant to ensure that our agencies are democratic and accountable are working or not, is a process by the public participating in these processes to see if they really work or not. And it's actually, even if we fail, even if we see that the RBNZ fails to address our concerns, then we actually understand more greatly what or what is not happening. I hope I'm wrong.
So just talking about the submissions, what are the things, what are the key points? I'm looking at my submission and I'm thinking to myself, well, first of all, I don't really want a CBDC. So I'm going to state very clearly, I don't want a CBDC because the survey hasn't given me the opportunity to say that. So I'm going to say that. Number two, I'm going to talk about if there is a CBDC, then I don't want programmability to be part of that. This is why I don't want a CBDC, because inherently it's programmable. And personally, I look at it and I think over the last 4 years, we had a prime minister that got a little bit of power and then decided to declare herself the single source of truth. And she decided to declare that she wanted to create a two-tier society. That's what power does to someone. So as much as Ian Woolford wants to promise that the Reserve Bank is not going to use the programmability powers of a CBDC, I may well trust him and I may well say, yeah, okay, that's fine, Ian, you know, go ahead, fill your boots. However, I don't want to give that power to some politician in 30 years' time who decides to go down the same track that our former Prime Minister went with during the COVID era. So what kind of safeguards could be put in place?
I personally think that we don't need a CBDC. In the PSGRNZ paper, we spend quite a bit talking about the appropriations process and the budgetary process, because a lot of people, we talk about what a deficit is. So people think, oh, we can't go into debt. We can't print money. We don't need to print money and just give it to big monopoly corporations, but we actually can use the budget process to, you know, increase funding for health and wellbeing and education and for agriculture and for science research that investigates the problems and challenges in New Zealand, not just for science research that produces patentable innovations. People at the moment think that the CBDC has the potential to deal with our social problems, and it should be through the political process that we deal with our social problems. And there's a very big indication that, you know, lobby groups have disrupted this process for a very long time. There's a very big indication that the public of New Zealand aren't being listened to, because the legacy media really will not diverge from the government's political position. So that's why we're not actually seeing any critical articles on CBDCs in any of the New Zealand legacy media. And, of course, tell me if I'm wrong, because perhaps there has been an article that's highly critical. But I think we can, I think, you know, the public can just say that, you know, if the Reserve Bank has powers to print money, why is this easier than, for example, the budgetary and appropriations process capacity to fund health, fund mental health, fund agricultural science, fund roading, fund education? Why is it, you know, so we need to understand that there's these crazy kind of rifts in our thinking that and we can sort of learn a little bit more about the how we use money in society for well-being, not just, you know, so we can put UBIs through the budgetary process, universal basic income. We don't just have to depend on like the Reserve Bank to save our souls, because they shouldn't, because we actually should have elected bureaucrats, elected, that's a slip of the tongue, elected politicians that can get sacked if they make a bad decision, rather than bureaucrats in the back office of the RBNZ working out how they're going to, you know, who's going to be favoured with CBDCs and who gets the money and all that sort of stuff. It's quite stunning, really. We absolutely don't need, you know, it's my opinion, we don't need CBDCs. What physicians and scientists for global responsibility have suggested is that we have a 6-year moratorium, and the moratorium includes any trials. So I you know, we see the trial process that the RBNZ is doing at the moment as a kind of a soft launch, as a way of manufacturing consent. Oh, see, it's worked. We can do it without actually having a greater look at the constitutional impact, having greater look at how we can make cash work better in society and then not create barriers to the use of cash.
Okay, well, we've run out of time now. So thank you very much for your time, Jody. As always, really appreciate your insight into it all. They're trying to simplify it as much as they possibly can to the public, but it's not actually as simple as what that New Zealand Herald story makes it out to be, I don't think. But I do want to recommend to everybody, or I do want to encourage everybody, to get on and make a submission before the end of the week so that our voices are heard, because a CBDC really is potentially the greatest control device in history. That's the way I see it. And I think we should actually be having a say on it before it comes in. And the Reserve Bank is trying to bring it in by 2030, aren't they?
I think, yeah, they definitely are. And please look for my article on the Daily Telegraph. It should be there now while we're speaking.
Also, where can people find the PSGR articles that you've written?
Thank you. At PSGRNZ, Spotify, YouTube, Instagram, Substack, and as well, we are at psgr.org.nz.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Jody.
Thank you.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.